Ever feel like you're putting in the study hours, but the knowledge just, I don't know, isn't sticking when you really need it?
Oh, absolutely. It's like trying to grab smoke sometimes.
Right. We all want that aha
Yeah.
moment, that deep understanding that stays with us, and ideally get there without feeling completely buried under information.
That's really the core puzzle, isn't it? For anyone trying to learn something new, how do you move beyond just covering the material to actually internalizing it?
And doing it efficiently, fitting it into life.
Exactly. In a way that works.
Okay, so for this deep dive, we've been looking into some really compelling research. We've got insights from Alexander Young, who studied what top performing students actually do.
Right, their habits and techniques.
Yeah, and we've paired that with a big review of proven learning techniques from the Percepts and Concepts Lab. Plus, we're touching on things like metacognition, thinking about your thinking.
And different note-taking ideas, spaced repetition.
And even how teaching someone else can boost your own learning. It's quite a mix.
So the goal here, our mission, is really to sift through all this and pull out the strategies that are, evidence-based, the ones that can genuinely make a difference in how you learn.
We're looking for those practical tips, maybe even some surprising ones, to help you learn smarter, retain more, and build knowledge you can actually use later on.
Smarter, not just harder. That's the key.
Okay, let's get into it. One of the first big ideas from Alexander Young, studying those top students, was about their whole mindset towards learning.
Yeah, he found they really viewed it as a journey, kind of a non-linear process, not just a task to check off.
That's a really important difference, isn't it? Because a lot of us fall into just trying to memorize facts, cramming for a test.
Right, rote memorization. But these top performers, they were after a deeper understanding. They knew it might involve some, back and forth, revisiting things.
And the interesting outcome Young found was that this focus on understanding, on the process itself.
It actually led to them feeling more relaxed.
Yeah. Less stressed during assessment periods. Because it wasn't about recalling every tiny detail, but having a solid grasp of the big picture.
So for you, the listener, the takeaway here is that aiming for that robust, lasting understanding, it's not just about the grade.
Right. It makes those evaluations less scary, sure, but it also means you can actually use that knowledge later in creative ways.
It empowers you, really.
Okay, so thinking about how our brains actually work during this journey, Young talks about focused versus diffuse thinking. We all know about focus, right? Intense concentration.
Absolutely. That's the prefrontal cortex working hard, filtering out distractions
Essential.
for tackling complex stuff or memorizing details.
But here's the twist. Young found these top performers weren't just focus machines. They actively use diffuse thinking too, letting their minds wander.
And that wandering isn't wasted time. That's the key insight. It's when your brain makes connections between seemingly unrelated things. That's often where the breakthroughs happen. Exactly. When you're not forcing it, your brain can explore more widely, connect dots you'd otherwise miss.
Young uses the classic Archimedes Eureka story, right? In the bath.
Perfect example. He wasn't actively wrestling with the problem then. The solution just popped up when his mind was relaxed, unfocused, diffuse mode.
And it's not just anecdotes. He mentions a study, I think, in Nature about a math problem.
Yeah, participants trying to solve a complex algorithm. After a period of sleep prime diffuse thinking time, the number who found a simpler shortcut more than doubled.
Wow, so our brains keep working, making connections, even when we're not consciously focused, like background processing.
Pretty much. So for you listening, it's a reminder that downtime, taking a walk, exercising, just letting your mind drift isn't unproductive. It can be incredibly valuable for learning.
That's where those insights might bubble up.
It really changes how you might structure your study time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not just about relentless focus.
Yeah, it's about alternating focused work, then letting things simmer.
Strategic breaks.
Okay, shifting to how we actually handle information. Young talks about working memory limits. We can only juggle so much consciously, right?
That's right. Working memory is notoriously limited, maybe like 4 to 7 items max for most people. Try to cram too much in and you overload it. Things don't transfer well to long-term memory.
That's cognitive load.
Exactly. The mental effort needed.
So, what do the top performers do? Young says they prioritize. They focus on the high-yield stuff, the core concepts.
And crucially, they break complex topics down into manageable chunks, like taking apart an engine to see how it works piece by piece.
Ah, chunking. So you group related bits of information together.
Yes, it reduces that cognitive load on your working memory, makes it way easier for your brain to process, and then encode that information into long-term storage. Think organized suitcases versus one giant messy one.
Easier to handle. Young also mentioned routines, right? Consistent study times, places, even rewards.
Yeah, building habits. It helps combat procrastination and makes the whole process more sustainable.
So if you're feeling overwhelmed by just masses of information, these structured approaches, focusing, chunking, routines, can really help you feel more in control.
Definitely less daunting, more achievable.
Okay, now here's one that sounds a bit counterintuitive at first. Priming. Young saw top students doing this.
Priming, like previewing the material before getting into the nitty-gritty details.
Exactly. Scanning headings, diagrams, maybe looking at example questions first.
Interesting. It's like creating a mental scaffold, right? Getting the overall structure in your head.
Yeah, like looking at the map before you start the hike. You get the terrain, the general direction.
Rather than just starting at step one and getting lost, by priming, you're activating related knowledge you already have. It gives the new information something to stick to. Mental hooks.
Makes the new stuff easier to organize and absorb.
Right. Your brain is sort of prepared to receive it.
So if you want to get the gist of something quickly, this priming could be really useful, understanding the big picture efficiently.
It makes you wonder if we often jump into the details too soon without that initial overview.
Good point. Okay, let's talk active learning. Young really hammers this home. Top performers test themselves constantly, much more than just passively taking notes.
This is huge. Passive note-taking feels productive, but it often creates an illusion of competence. Active engagement forces deeper processing.
He told a story about a student who basically ditched traditional notes and just wrote active recall questions during lectures.
And her grades went up significantly. That's a powerful shift, isn't it? From just receiving information to actively wrestling with it.
Constantly retrieving. Young called the lecture or reading the primary learning event the key time to engage actively.
And for testing, he stressed using things like past papers, question banks.
Relevant stuff at the right difficulty. He even compared it to video games, finding that sweet spot of challenge and feedback that keeps you engaged in the flow.
Yeah, similar principles. Now, connecting this to the Percepts and Concepts Lab review, their findings strongly back this up. They call it practice testing.
And they found it super effective, right? Across different subjects, students, materials.
Hugely effective. Boosts memory, problem solving, comprehension. It's one of the most robust techniques they reviewed.
And way better than just rereading.
Miles better. The act of retrieving information actually strengthens that memory trace. The lab points to different ways to do it. Flashcards, practice problems, full tests.
So lots of options.
Yeah. And interestingly, it helps even if the practice test format isn't exactly like the final exam. It helps you organize the knowledge itself.
And what about long term?
That's key. The benefits of testing often get bigger over longer delays. It really builds durable knowledge.
Okay, so how do we do it? Flashcards, you said.
Flashcards are great. The Cornell note-taking system, where you cover the notes and quiz yourself from cues in the margin, end-of-chapter questions in textbooks.
Basically, anything that forces you to pull the information out of your own head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Retrieval-based practice. And keep doing it until you get it right multiple times, ideally with increasing gaps between tests. Oh, and feedback helps too, knowing if you are right or wrong and why.
So ditch the highlighter. Start quizzing.
That's a pretty good summary, yeah. Make self-testing a regular thing.
Okay, so you've learned actively. What's next? Young, stressed, reflection, and review.
Essential for consolidation. Making sure it sticks. And Young suggests mixing up how you review. Don't just reread the same notes.
How so?
Try summarizing in your own words. Maybe explain it out loud to yourself or someone else. Create new practice questions based on it. Vary the approach.
And you mentioned Ebbinghaus, the forgetting curve, that timing matters.
Right. That initial forgetting happens fast. Reviewing within the first 12 hours or so after learning something new is apparently quite critical to counteract that drop-off.
Okay, so that first day is important.
Very. He suggests maybe starting your next study session with a quick review of the last one and ending the day with a review of what you covered. Build it into the routine.
It all comes back to really wanting that information to last, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Consistent, varied review strengthens those neural pathways for the long haul.
Now, the Percepts and Concepts Lab mentioned a couple of other specific techniques. Elaborative interrogation. Sounds intense.
It's actually simpler than it sounds. It just means asking yourself why. Questions about what you're learning.
This why?
Yeah. Why is this fact true? Why does this make sense? Why is this important? It forces you to connect the new stuff with what you already know.
Ah, so you're building connections.
Exactly. integrating it. Research shows it helps with learning factual information across different subjects. Like, if you learn birds migrate, asking why do birds migrate forces deeper thinking.
Moving beyond just the what to the why. I like that.
Deeper connections, better understanding.
Okay, and the other one was self-explanation.
Self-explanation is kind of like thinking out loud about your learning process. As you read or solve a problem, you explain to yourself what you're doing, what you understand, how it connects to prior knowledge.
So you're articulating your thought process.
Pretty much. It can be prompted, like, what does this mean? Or just a running commentary. It seems particularly good for helping you apply knowledge in new situations, what researchers call far transfer.
By talking it through, even just internally, you solidify it.
And you spot gaps in your understanding, too. It's a form of self-monitoring.
Okay, let's touch on summarizing. Lots of people do it. What did the lab say?
Well, the research is a bit mixed on summarization as a standalone technique.
Meaning just writing a summary might not be enough.
Right. The quality of the summary is really important. It needs to capture the main points accurately without adding wrong info or just rambling.
That makes sense. A bad summary won't help much.
Exactly. But they did find that teaching people how to summarize well can be beneficial, especially younger students. And its effectiveness might depend on the type of test you're preparing for.
So, not useless, but maybe not the magic bullet unless done well.
Something like that, yes.
Okay, now the one that might hurt a few feelings, highlighting and underlining. We all do it.
Yeah, it feels active, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But the Percepts and Concepts Lab actually rates it as having low utility when used alone.
Low utility? Really?
It seems, while it might help you remember the specific things you highlighted, maybe because they stand out, the isolation effect can actually harm your memory for the stuff you didn't highlight.
Oh, so you focus on the highlighted bits and might miss the rest of the context.
That's the danger. Actively choosing what to highlight is better than reading pre-highlighted text. But overall, other active techniques just seem to work better for real comprehension.
Might need to rethink my rainbow highlighter strategy. What about using mental imagery?
Creating pictures in your head. The research there is also a bit inconsistent for learning from text.
Oh.
Sometimes it helps, especially for sentences or stories that are easy to visualize. But the benefits aren't always there. And it can depend on, like, whether you're reading versus listening and what kind of test you take later.
So maybe helpful sometimes, but not a guaranteed winner.
Not consistently robust across the board, no.
And finally, rereading, going over the material again and again. Surely that helps.
Intuitively, yes. But again, the research says it doesn't consistently boost performance compared to other methods like testing.
Really? Even multiple rereads?
It might help a bit with recalling specific facts, but it doesn't seem to do much for deeper comprehension or recognizing concepts. The lab basically says your time is usually better spent on practice testing.
Wow. Okay, so active retrieval beats passive review almost every time.
That seems to be the overwhelming message from cognitive science, yes.
Right, let's move to a big one. Distributed practice. Spaced repetition.
Ah, yes. This is a really powerful one, grounded in the forgetting curve. We forget things over time, right?
Yeah.
Especially quickly at first.
Mm-hmm.
Spaced repetition means reviewing information at increasing intervals. You actively fight that forgetting curve. It leads to much, much better long-term retention and cramming everything in at once.
Massed practice, yeah. Like watering a plant regularly versus dumping a bucket on it once.
Great analogy. Birmingham City University mentioned a practical method, the 2357 rule.
Yeah, summarize immediately, test the next day, then 3 days later, then 7 days later. Something like that.
Exactly. A simple framework. By spacing out those reviews, you force retrieval when the memory is starting to fade, which strengthens it more effectively each time. The benefits are clear: less cramming, stronger memory, smarter studying.
And the Percepts lab noted that combining spaced repetition with practice testing
is even more effective. Distributed practice testing, the gold standard, perhaps.
Seems like a much more sustainable way to learn for the long term.
Definitely. It can be tricky to implement. Textbooks aren't always set up for it, and, you know, procrastination happens.
Guilty.
We all are. But the payoff for durable knowledge is huge.
Okay, another interesting one from the lab. Interleaved practice. What's that about?
Interleaving means mixing up different types of problems or topics within one study session. The opposite is blocked practice, where you do all of one type, then all of another.
So instead of doing 20 problems on formula A, then 20 on formula B, you mix them up.
Exactly, like A, B, A, A, B, A. And the research often finds that although blocked practice might feel easier during study,
interleaving leads to better performance on a later test.
Typically, yes. The theory is that mixing forces you to discriminate between the problem types. You have to figure out which strategy or formula to use each time, rather than just applying the same one over and over.
Ah, so it strengthens your ability to choose the right tool for the job.
Precisely. It enhances discrimination and retrieval from long-term memory. A practical tip is, once you learn a new topic, start mixing practice problems from that topic with ones from older, related topics.
Makes you think more actively about what you're doing, not just how.
Right. Less autopilot.
Now this one sounds fun. The protege effect. Learning by teaching.
It's a fascinating phenomenon. The act of preparing to teach someone else, or actually teaching them, forces you to understand the material much more deeply yourself.
To teach is to learn twice.
That's the essence of it. And it doesn't have to be formal teaching. Explaining a concept to a friend, a study buddy, even just imagining you have to teach it.
WN.com listed tons of benefits. Deeper understanding, reinforces knowledge, boosts critical thinking, problem solving.
Better communication skills, connection, confidence, patience. It's quite a list.
Because to teach it well, you really have to break it down, organize it logically, anticipate questions.
You engage with it on a whole different level. There's also the Feynman technique, right?
Yeah.
Explaining something complex in really simple terms, like teaching a child. That forces clarity.
So explaining things to others is a powerful learning tool for yourself.
A definite win-win.
Okay, finally, let's talk about the foundation that seems to hold all this together, metacognition.
Thinking about your thinking.
Yeah.
It's about being aware of your own learning processes.
Also,
it involves planning your approach. How am I going to learn this? Monitoring your understanding as you go. Am I getting this? Where am I confused? And evaluating how well your strategies worked afterwards. Did that method help? What could I do differently?
So it's being strategic and reflective about your own learning.
Exactly. Cambridge International Education highlights that good metacognitive skills are strong predictors of success and can even help make up for other cognitive challenges. It improves achievement across the board.
Examples might be like reciprocal teaching, where you summarize, question, clarify.
Yeah, that's a great metacognitive strategy.
Yeah.
Or using planners, concept maps, self-assessment checklists, tools to manage and evaluate your own learning.
It sounds like the skill that lets you take control and figure out what actually works for you.
That's a perfect way to put it. It empowers you to become a more effective, self-directed learner. It's the glue that holds effective study habits together.
Okay, so pulling this all together, it feels like the overwhelming message from both top students and cognitive science is get active, be strategic, space it out.
Right.
Definitely. Move away from passive rereading and highlighting alone. The real gains come from active engagement.
We've had some real aha moments here, I think. The power of letting your mind wander.
Diffuse thinking, yeah. And the huge impact of practice testing and spaced repetition.
Plus the surprising effectiveness of teaching others and just being more aware of how you learn with metacognition.
It's a whole toolkit of evidence-based approaches.
It really is. I hope listening to this gives you some concrete ideas to experiment with to find what clicks for your own learning style.
Absolutely. So the question for you now is, armed with these insights, how are you going to strategically shift your approach next time you need to learn something to really unlock that deeper understanding and make the knowledge last?